AFL. It's the Football League podcast that stands with Don Goodman. Coming up, the final day of the regular championship season sees Ipswich take a tractor out of town and Birmingham's brave new dawn end in League One. What the hull are the Tigers up to? And the playoffs are underway. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Yeah, if you missed that, listener, Don Goodman catching some strays on Ipswich's open top bus parade, where I think it's fair to say a couple of the players might still have been feeling the effects of the celebrations. Well deserved they were too. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I'm joined by Adrian Clark. Hey, Adrian Clarky.
Hello. Yeah, I've always been an Ipswich fan. So junior blue. You know, this is what a glorious time to be alive, eh? Just hoping for Arsenal to, you know, sort of do the double. And with Leicester, with obviously my in-laws being Leicester fans, this could be the dream season in the Clark household. I think City will spoil that, but you never know. But well done, Ipswich.
Find yourself a footballing bandwagon and Adrian Clark will hitch himself to it. Sam, we did a temperature check on you before we hit record and I can confirm that you have got playoff fever.
Indeed. Just on what Clarkie just said there, I did a little bit, just like an EFL roundup the other day on the radio, the day after Ipswich got promoted. I think it was a little bit of a stretch to introduce me as like a former Ipswich striker. Have you recovered from the celebration yet, Sam? I was thinking they absolutely despised me there, the punters, and I was useless. So a little bit of a stretch to me for me to be jumping on this one. Although, obviously, for the people I do know down there, and all the glorious ex-players, I am chuffed indeed.
Yeah, we'll do a little hat tip to Ipswich shortly. First, though, let me tell you that the guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. We are going to start today talking about some managerial moves. And EFL lovers set their faces to stunned on Tuesday as Hull City announced they'd sack Liam Rossignol. He'd guided the Tigers to their first top half finish since 2016 and only signed a 3-year contract extension in December. Adrian, like many, this left you baffled.
It did. Not everyone agreed, which really did shock me, actually. A few people on the sort of timeline of various threads were saying that it was the right decision. But for me, I thought he did a fantastic job. Okay, he had a decent budget. You know, he was allowed to bring in some quality players. But you know, when he started the job, Hull were battling relegation and he took them to the brink of the playoffs. And I thought that by and large, they had an excellent season. Very well coached team, organised. But according to the owner, he's since come on the radio and said that the reason he sacked him, it's not underachievement, it's a style thing. He said it's just a little bit too defensive for me. I want to be out of my seat more often, enjoying more attacking, swashbuckling football. But look, you got to respect the owner's right to have the sort of team that he wants. But I don't think too many Hull fans were complaining about Liam Rossignol and the style of play.
I suppose we shouldn't be surprised, Sam, that an entertainment mogul wants to get value for money in that regard. Which side of the fence are you on this one? Because it's the second time, isn't it, that Rossignol's left a job with some people scratching their heads.
Yeah, compared to Simon Cowell, wasn't he? I think maybe in an article when he got the gig. So he'd still have the same lineup from the original X Factor if he was not going to be following suit with Cal. So yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah, Clarkie makes some really good points. Like, you know, if you've gone from battling relegation a couple of years ago to improving year on year as Hull have, and obviously under his tenure as well, you know, 70 points, 12 more points than last season. I think the negatives are probably the home form. I think it's just two wins this calendar year. I think mitigating circumstances in terms of the style. He's not really had a centre forward. You could argue they brought in Connolly last summer, but had they had the lap for the entirety of the season, we could have been talking about a different outcome. I suppose if you've been a little bit critical, those front players that were brought in, exceptional front players, and obviously they've probably paid decent whack for the likes of Philogene, Zaruri, Carvalho. Have they really had the impetus that we anticipated? Probably not. So yeah, maybe he's pointing towards that. They have played a little bit safe. But that's the style, isn't it? He's quite heavy on possession, Liam Rossini. He would have known that from the outset of the season. So I think it's incredibly harsh. Those comments don't clear things up. If anything, I feel it's probably even harsher now, having heard that. I thought that maybe something probably went on behind the scenes, or they'd clashed in some regard, or maybe the finances had determined that he had to get them into the playoffs this season. So to hear that it's a style thing, that doesn't sit particularly well with me, because Liam Rossini has done a good job clearly in getting them on the cusp of the playoffs.
Yeah. And it's not like he had like the world's greatest back four. And I think, you know,
improving Green, players, isn't it, Clarkey? Improving players, like we're probably going to speak about with Kieran McKenna. You know, exactly. a lot of that defensive unit was there under the previous managers, right?
Exactly, struggling at the wrong end. And, you know, Greaves has come on, he's done very well. But I think when he didn't spend money on the defence, and if that's maybe the weakest area of the team, then you have to proceed with a little bit of caution. You have to, you know, work on the shape. I'll point to Mikel Arteta all day long on situations like this. When he inherited the Arsenal squad, he played a dour style of football because he had to, because they weren't very good. And he had to sort the shape, the defensive attributes. He had to raise standards without the ball to give the team a platform to kick on. And you see what Arsenal are producing now. And I just think it's really hard to label him too defensive. I just think it was a work in progress that's been cut short unfairly.
I mean, suspect he won't be out of work for long. John Percy of The Telegraph reporting that the former Hamburg coach Tom Walter is the top target for the Tigers. Elsewhere, Gillingham have appointed Mark Bonner as successor to Stephen Clements, whose short stint was abruptly ended last week. Sammy knows what it takes to get out of League Two, having done so with Cambridge. He left there with his reputation intact. I think this one seems pretty sensible to me.
Yeah, no surprise to see him back in. Always comes across really well. I think he was on the radio last night and missed it, but that would have been interesting to hear some snippets after his appointment. Yeah, he obviously had a brilliant strike pairing, didn't he? That complemented each other really well at Cambridge, if you're thinking back to that promotion side, Ironside and Paul Mullen, of course. But I think generally, obviously knows how to set a team up, but I would say relatively conservative. That's probably due to the resources and the type of budget he had to play with at Cambridge United. So all of a sudden he goes in, I'm sure, with an opportunity to have a say in recruitment, with Heston Tyler and Jacket, probably a better budget, better players. So we'll see what he can do with that. Obviously, the problem for Stephen Clements was goals, probably, and making them more exciting. Having inherited, again, a team that was probably defensively pretty strong, but didn't have loads going the other way from Neil Harris. So I think a big summer to get the squad shaped. And also, he's got to start probably quick and start outscoring opponents and going to win games rather than, you know, probably being quite defensively set up as they have been over the past couple of years.
I did hear a bit of him on the radio actually on Tuesday. He was talking about the fact that he's already had his holiday and that he's straight to work now. He won't be calling the players in for individual meetings, but he was hoping to speak to some of them over the phone. Interestingly, Clarkey, because you spoke last week when we spoke about Stephen Clements of Kenny Jackett and Heston Tyler and their influence. He said he was looking forward to working with him. He's not going to say anything else, is he? But that's the relationship to keep an eye on, I guess, here.
Yeah, look. Well, Jacket has had a part in him coming, hasn't he? So, yeah, hopefully, you know, that it's all sweetness at the minute, and hopefully that will last. Hopefully they'll click. Yeah, it's all about getting more goals out of the team. Only Forest Green scored fewer goals in League Two this season. 46 is pretty pitiful. Obviously won a game. Didn't, you know, they conceded less than all of the teams in the playoffs. So that side of it doesn't need too much improvement. I always think with Gillingham, it surprises me. Great location, obviously not too far from London, you know, where there are so many clubs. I don't think they've maximised the loan market anywhere near well enough. You know, they've got a great pool of clubs and academies and players there that they could bring in on loan. But I think that their recruitment has been average, to say the least. I think there's a lot of promising young talent that could do worse than work with Mark Bonner. next season at Gillingham. I think, I expect them to raid. Why don't they raid Arsenal, Spurs, West Ham, these kind of sides? They've got some fantastic young talent. Go out there and give them some experience in League Two.
We'll see how he gets on. All right, that's the managerial chat done. We'll have some brief reflections on the final day of the Championship next. So the regular season is done. Everything went pretty much as expected. Few would have predicted Blackburn winning at Leicester, but in terms of the table, not much move from the start to the end of the day. Last chance to say something nice about Ipswich before they leave us for the Premier League. Clarky, I've got Kieran McKenna vying with Xabi Alonso for the best manager in Europe this season. Is that crazy? I mean, back-to-back promotions, nearly 200 points across two seasons, revitalised a club, a town, etc.
He's got to be up there, hasn't he? In Europe, you're spreading the net pretty wide there. My knowledge of everything European is maybe not the best. Girona's head coach in Spain, I think, would probably be in the mix. But yeah, he's been pretty faultless. He's done it playing a lovely brand of football. Just improved players, as Sam said earlier. Yeah, really improved players. So, yeah, wonderful achievement. What I don't get is why you get a trophy for being runners-up in the Championship. What's that all about? That was a stretch. Yeah, exactly. I get it. It works for an open-top bus parade and for photo opportunities, but I don't really understand that. But, yeah, no, fantastic team. And that they had their eyes on the Premier League from quite a way back when they were in League One. I remember Ipswich fans talking up the prospect of going all the way through. We've got our eye on the Premier League and they've done it already. So, yeah, well done to them. It's not just Kieran McKenna. He's been brilliant. But I think the players deserve enormous credit for the confidence that they've gone into matches with, because they attacked every game with gusto, trying to score goals, trying to win the game. I think it was so good to watch.
I think there'll be a big overhaul, Sam, the squad. There sort of has to be when you come up, doesn't there? But they have the benefit of not having done it through the playoffs, so getting that little bit extra preparation time, which can be so vital.
Yeah, I think the inevitably they'll change a lot of the squad. And as sad as it is and, yeah, disappointing for some of the individuals, they'll know the writing has been on the wall. The players that have been a bit part towards the tail end of this year that have not really been in Kieran McKenna's plans but have played the odd game and come in when there's been injuries, they'll understand. As hard as it is, they'll have to enjoy the celebrations, enjoy Vegas, enjoy the next couple of weeks, and then find new employers. That's the nature of the beast. Yeah, he'll need, I wouldn't be able to put a number on it, he'll need to improve all areas. That's obvious, but I suppose the lads that have played the majority of the games, you would hope that they can all have a part to play next year. The likes of, you know, Burgess, Edmondson, Hladke, the ones that you didn't anticipate having such major impacts, Chaplin, the two central midfield players who probably a year or two ago looked like they were maybe done in the Championship. So for Morsi and Luongo all of a sudden to be Premier League players is incredible. They'll have to tap into the loan market again. Hutchinson and Sarmiento have been phenomenal. And I think a real pivotal moment of the season as well, just to maybe galvanise, to add a little bit of belief, confidence, was going to get Kiefer Moore and Al Hamady. I don't know how many goals, I haven't got it in front of me, they contributed, but they certainly gave them more of an impact in the forward line with Hurst missing. So, yeah, I like to think that all these guys are going to be around next year, but the reality is, yeah, they'll have to upgrade. That's a miserable conversation for a month after the holidays.
on the loan market, very quickly, I mean, if you're a Premier League manager or academy manager or under-23s manager, you're looking for people you can trust with the young players, with good players that can't quite get into your team. I mean, Kieran McKenna's going to be at the top of most lists, isn't he? So it's a lovely club to play for. When you're doing well, Sam, I know you didn't always have the best experience there, but it is a lovely club and very appealing, I would imagine, for some serious talent to rock up at Portman Road this summer.
Clarky, when I was doing, it was the Millwall game, I think it was November time at Portman Road, and I just got, you know, really carried away with the atmosphere and the football that I was seeing. Last thing I said on the radio that night was like, these are in it, the automatic race. They're not going away. And it was November. And yeah, I was thinking, I got off air and I got back in my car and went, oh, I've gone too big there. Gone too big. Like, regretted it all the way home. And I thought, gone massive there. And I just remember thinking, you know, watching them in the flesh, the excitement, like, they brought to me, the pattern of play, just everything, the relentless nature and pursuit for goals and chances that night. Just, there was just something about it. honestly. And I'm so pleased that I've been kind of proved right. Well, I've proved myself right because I felt it that night and I've not been back since. But they're a phenomenally good team this year. You know, it's an equally as good story as Luton making it possibly. So incredible couple of years for two of my old clubs.
Mm. And Alhamady and Moore, by the way, 11 goals between the pair of them. They chipped in the league. So that was indeed very valuable. So all good vibes at Ipswich, not the same at Birmingham. They were relegated, probably not a surprise after their sixth manager season. The open letters were all over the club website. Chairman Tom Wagner said, "We remain resolute in our pursuit of positive change, both on and off the pitch. Our dedication to the betterment of this wonderful club transcends this unfortunate outcome, anchoring us firmly in our continued ambition for what is to come." Gary Cook, the chief exec, was at it too. He said, "Some mistakes have been made, largely by you, Gary, by the sounds of it. And we will learn from them and take the necessary actions to ensure they never happen again." Obviously, you don't want to get relegated, Clarkey. Obviously, this is embarrassing for Tom Brady et al. But the feeling seems to be that actually what they've been doing in terms of trying to build the club back up from what was a pretty low base under the previous ownership has largely been positive. You'd expect them to chuck a load of money at it, but maybe not waste it and be amongst the contenders to go up in League One next season and only spend a season or two down there.
I think there's every chance Birmingham City will have the biggest budget in League One next season. You know, these are ambitious owners. I don't think they're messing around. The supporters really love them. Yeah, you know, they don't love the fact that John Eustace got sacked and they brought Wayne Rooney in. That is a big, big mistake. But then they have largely forgiven them for it because the other things, you know, around St Andrews, the ground's so much nicer than it used to be. There are lots of little things that they've changed around the place that are for the better. And obviously they're building a brand new ground, which will be amazing, I'm sure. So yeah, I genuinely think it might not be the worst thing to happen to Birmingham City. It's been a dreary decade or so for Blues fans who've pretty much had to put up with mid-table to lower end table championship football for season after season after season. It'll be a bit of fun in League One. They'll win most weeks. They'll go and spend some money on some good players this summer and they'll probably bounce straight back up. It'll be a fun season. And when they do come back up, they'll be stronger than they are now. So, yeah, short-term pain, but I think in the long term, there's going to be a lot of progression.
I remember thinking it'd be a bit of fun when Forest got relegated to League One. And 3 years later, I was thinking, this is not as much fun as I thought it would be. elsewhere, Sam, while we are praising you, or you're praising yourself for your predictions earlier in the season, you've been Team Danny Roll from you were a very, very early adopter of getting on the Roll train. And boy, were you proved right. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday are going to have some difficulty hanging on to this fella for much longer.
Danny Roo.
I think I just got lucky. I think I just got down a rabbit hole and read some athletic long reads on Sheffield Wednesday's new appointment. Just got there before Clarkey. Do you know what I mean? Clarkey was getting some stick after a defeat. And I went, well, actually, Adrian, they played quite well.
This is true.
The counter pressing was actually very evident to me in that first half, you know, that type of spiel. Outstanding. And like QPR, mouth-watering, I think, for next season. So much so, my brother's talking about a season ticket already. It's incredible scenes, but I think a lot of similarities between those two sides. And also, you know, two coaches who have probably had to adapt, you know, given the circumstances and given the squads that they've inherited. So going forward, we probably haven't seen anything like the excitement that those two will bring with a whole summer and an opportunity to bring in their own players. So, yeah, it's very unusual to have a team in the predicament that Sheffield Wednesday were and have the whole support just fully behind this guy. So yeah, outstanding job from him and Marty Cifuentes, and credit Argyle as well, because I had them down a month ago. So to make that change, you know, one of the most disastrous managerial appointments, you've got to say, in the Championship this season, with Ian Foster lasting a couple of months, to go back to the two chaps who have worked at the club in different roles, give them the keys to the dugout, if that's a phrase, for the remaining six games, and get three victories, three clean sheets as well. Just to, I think, tap into what the players knew got them success under Stephen Schumacher in particular. Same formation, made them defensively more resolute. Three victories with clean sheets. So I didn't fancy them at home to Hull City, but yeah, credit to them for standing in the division as well. Amazing.
And finally, Clarkey, you could have forgiven John Eustace a wry smile at full time in the final day of the championship, because he stays in it with Blackburn as Birmingham go down. He did what he was appointed for, basically. But you feel like there are tests for Blackburn next season, particularly if they lose the main man, Smodix, over the summer.
Yeah, which they will. But don't forget, they lost Adam Wharton, and we've seen how good he is in the Premier League. Yeah, Crystal Palace. For me, he's better than Kobbie Mainoo at Manchester United. I think if he was wearing a United shirt, he's already made his England debut. I think that he's a top player that's been taken out of their side. Sammy Smodix. Is it a freak season for Sammy Smodics, or is this something he can maintain? You know, it's looking at his track record, he's always scored goals, but not this volume. So they obviously missed out on the Ben Brereton-Diaz windfall, didn't they? I suspect they sell Sammy Smodics.
He's got Ipswich written all over him.
He has. Or Leicester, who we will look to probably, who might have to sell, they might sell Dewsbury Hall. So I think he'd be quite a good fit in that position, albeit that's a little bit deeper than what he's played for Rovers. But yeah, Smodix has got his future Leicester. Certainly, they're the sort of teams that he'd suit. So yeah, no, but well done, Eustace. I mean, he's not exciting, is he? He's a very sort of good organiser. He's good at the, you know, setting teams up, etc. Very good counter-attacking team. And it's probably fitting, really, that they scored both their goals on breakaways at Leicester. I never saw that result come in. I thought Leicester would win. But yeah, two brilliant breakaway goals to seal their status in the Championship.
And while we're talking about the Championship, the playoffs get underway on Saturday. Really, it's four teams who are bang out of form in a lot of ways. Norwich v Leeds is where we'll start. Farker me, thought Daniel. Possibly the last thing that he would have wanted would be to face his old side, I'm sure. But Leeds stumbling into the playoffs means that that's what he's got. Neither team coming into this in any sort of form. I guess, Clarkey, for Norwich, you haven't lost at Carrow Road since November. This is about getting a decent lead to take back to Elland Road, because that's going to be an absolute cauldron in the return.
I wouldn't fancy Norwich to win the second leg. Their away record is pretty poor anyway. They didn't put up much of a fight at Birmingham, did they, on the last day? And they've lost a lot of matches to some pretty average teams away from Carrow Road this season. So yes, I think for Norwich to stand any chance of getting to Wembley, they need to win. And they've got a chance of winning. No, there's no doubt about that, because, as you said, great home form, good forward players. Obviously, Josh Sargent is a real handful. Sara has got that ability to produce sort of game-changing moments. And Leeds are certainly on their knees a little bit form-wise. So, you know, there's a worry, really, that they lost meekly at home to Southampton in the way they did. So, yeah, this is... I'd almost make Norwich favourites for the first leg, but over the two, I'd still just about side with Leeds United. Wouldn't surprise me if this is quite cagey. Cast your mind back to the Old Farm derby, Norwich Ipswich. Horrible game. Norwich nicked it 1-0. I think they'll look to tame Leeds United's front guys in this match. I don't think they'll play in a particularly free-flowing way, Norwich City. But, you know, hope I'm proved wrong.
Will Ferrell has bought a minority stake in Leeds, joining Russell Crowe. They're going to need more gladiators than anchormen over the next two, possibly three games, you would assume. Sam, they've won one of six. They lost four of those. What on earth has happened here? Because they look like they were motoring away.
It's difficult, isn't it? I think I spoke about the amount of players that were banging form when they were in that incredible run. So I think there's been a loss of form, particularly to the forward players, maybe Somerville apart. So the other chaps who were a consistent source of goals around him and threat are not at that level anymore. I think the injuries to James and Bamford definitely hindered them in the last couple of games. Absolutely at QPR, I was there and was thinking that second half needed the impetus of some fresh blood, and the substitutions available to Farker weren't as good as they have been. There seems to be this kind of narrative about the midfield being too open, and it was at QPR, but I think it's quite harsh to pin it on young Archie Gray, who's obviously played like fullback and played central midfield this year. And I think latterly he's been in midfield, and there seems to be some suggestion that they're just a bit open in that area of the pitch. They were at QPR, but you know, I don't think that's necessarily down to him. But I wouldn't be surprised if that is changed for these games. And the defending is the most obvious thing, isn't it? I mean, clean sheet after clean sheet. I think he's still got the most, doesn't he, Melier, over Palmer at West Bromwich Albion. But yeah, 9 conceded in 3 games. Looks like there's a bit of a weakness from balls into the box, set pieces at the moment as well. So there's a lot of problems there. But I suppose Daniel Farker and, you know, neutrals, you just need to think back to that period post-Christmas when they were knocking everyone aside, not conceding any goals. We know they've arguably got on par with Leicester, the best 11 in the division when they go out there. It's time to show it. I'm struggling to get really, I mean, I'm working on 2 of these games, but I don't know if it's just because they're all recent Premier League sides to a degree. There's not that maybe romance looking at this lineup. I don't know. I keep forgetting who's playing who for a start. I don't know. So, as you say, Matt, it's 4 teams. Southampton maybe circumstantially are not in any form, but they've had the opportunity to, of course, switch off and rest to a degree. The other 3 absolutely have finished the season slowly.
So high noon showdown at Carrow Road at 2:15. It'll be West Brom versus Southampton at the Hawthorns. As we said, Saints have known their fate for a while. Took Albion a long time to sew up their playoff spot. Took until the last day, actually. Sam's hinted at it there, Adrian, but psychologically must have been important for Southampton to snap that 3-match losing streak with the win at Elland Road on the final day.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they come into it bouncing now, don't they? Those results ultimately didn't matter that preceded it. And you remember the last game and you've gone to Elland Road and won, and you've won well. They've got good memories of playing West Brom as well. I remember watching the game at the Hawthorns and they destroyed them. Yeah, it was sort of a bit of a gulf in class that night. But they've lost a couple of key players to injury, obviously, Southampton since then. But some of the pass and move football was just too good for West Bromwich Albion to cope with. I think they won 2-0 at the Hawthorns, but memory serves me, it could have been 3 or 4, really. So they'll go into it with confidence. But West Brom, just that, I think Southampton should progress, but there's that bit of Corbran that just sort of holds me back from going all in on Southampton, because Corbran is a clever so-and-so that knows how to sort of negate teams and players and managers on these one-off occasions. We saw it with Huddersfield, didn't we? So, yeah, I think I fancy Southampton, but the Corbran factor is strong.
That mean that West Brom, Sam, will have to go for this a bit rather than being cagey because they've got the home leg first? Is that not such a factor in these games?
No, I don't think they will. That's all, to be honest. No, I completely agree with Clarkey. I think he'll be working all the hours around the clock to come up with something.
It'll be about stopping Southampton rather than how they're going to hurt Southampton.
Yeah, to spoil this. And I suppose you just look at it on the face of it, that they've not really got a striker, West Bromwich Albion, or Thomas Asante has been reintroduced the last game. I think Jed Wallace was on the bench. So they haven't got a striker in form, what I'm trying to say. And a few weeks ago, you would have pointed towards Mikey Johnson on the flank. He was bang at it. All of a sudden, you know, you're scratching around really where their creative sparks are and who's right at the top of their game. Southampton, throughout the season, you can rely on Jay Adams and Adam Armstrong for goals, and Brooks, maybe that could be their front 3, and Ross Stewart was back on the bench the other day. So, I mean, that's, you know, a quartet of players that can cause you no end of problems. So I don't think Corbram, having watched him the last few years, will go toe-to-toe fully. He'll try and defend resolutely, probably, and nick something in that home game. Maybe be a little bit more open, obviously, because they're at home. But yeah, I think they won comfortably, didn't they, twice, Southampton, I think, in the league fixtures. So it feels like they've got it all to do. It feels like Southampton are probably just about the best placed team going into this playoff, despite the, you know, few defeats towards the tail end. But I think Russell Martin's probably spent the last few weeks just plotting and planning and being able to rest one or two of the big hitters, which would have been much needed after the season.
Sure would. All right, we'll leave the Championship there. We'll come back and talk about League One. So, Peterborough versus Oxford round 2 is tonight as we record. Adrian's going to be there. Sam was at the first leg. If you were to give him one line of a scouting report, Sam, what would it be from that match?
The consensus was that Peterborough United were a little bit more conservative than they would ordinarily be, probably due to the fact that Oxford smashed them 5-0 relatively recently at the Kassam. So I think the tactical setup of Peterborough, not in terms of the formation, but maybe the direction from the manager was slightly different, certainly in the first half. And keep an eye on Darren Ferguson, because there is something delightfully old school about his lambasting from the technical area. I saw what his wide player, David Adjaboy, give the ball away in the first half. He sent Poku to go and warm up after 15 minutes. I'm sure you've been there, Clarkie.
Oh, mate.
and Poku was on at half time. So
it's always the winger. It's always the winger. The winger screws up, the managers get the hump. It's,
I would expect them to attack it tonight, obviously. Good goal, set piece goal. Cameron Brannigan did amazingly at the far post to keep it alive, and Elliot Moore scored a well-crafted free kick. Tyler Goodrum was the pick for Oxford. Nice little technical, creative player. So keep an eye out for him as well, Clarkie. But I'd expect Posh to be very different from that first leg.
Well, whoever comes through that one is going to be taking on Bolton at Wembley. They got through 5-4 on aggregate against Barnsley. Thought this one was done and dusted, Clarkie, after a 3-1 win for the Trotters at Oakwell. But the second leg went to Barnsley, albeit they go out on aggregate, as I say. Were Barnsley just footloose and fancy-free and going for it? And did the nerves get to Bolton, do you think?
Maybe the bit of game management could have been better, I think, from Bolton in the second leg. They were in such a good position, weren't they? And yeah, maybe the nerves got to them a touch. You know, Barnsley could throw caution to the wind. I think the better team got through. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Funny, really, that maybe set pieces ultimately kind of proved to be the difference. Remember Randall Williams scoring straight from a corner in that first leg to make it 3-1. That was the cushion goal. And then they scored another goal from a corner in the return leg. I just felt that the goalie, Liam Roberts, was a bit edgy, didn't have a lot of presence on those, and that kind of made the difference across the tie. Really like the wing backs. I think that they had two, you know, really good semi-finals, Dacres Cogley and Williams as well. You know, loads of, you know, buccaneering runs down the wings and lots of balls put into the box. So yeah, they'll be good to watch at Wembley, whoever they face. They're an excellent team, Bolton Wanderers. What I found amazing in the first leg was that they boomed it, because they were such a footballing team, and then they just changed completely and just went a bit long ball just to miss out the Barnsley press. So it showed that Ian Everett is prepared to do things differently if he needs to. But thinking about the potential finalists, Peterborough or Oxford, both attacking sides that try and get the ball wide to their wingers, I think it's going to be a really good final, whoever it ends up being.
Well, it's going to be Bolton's first appearance in a playoff final since 2001. They beat Preston 3-0 back on that day. Gareth Farrelly and former England striker Michael Ricketts were on the score sheet on that day. In terms of League Two, then, it's looking like a Crawley versus Doncaster playoff final, both enjoying big first leg wins. A day later than planned, after a deluge of rain postponed the first meeting of Crawley and MK Dons, it was the Reds who dismantled the Dons at Broadfield Stadium on Tuesday, in front of, among others, Sam Parkin. Sam, maybe we are all going to make it, as the ownership group acronym states. They were well worth the win here, albeit that goal line clearance from Will Wright to stop MK Dons going 1-0 up might have been a big moment.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it was just absolute chaos from the outset. I think we predicted this probably. It was so open first few minutes, and that was a massive chance for Max Dean, who, if you've not seen him, he's great fun. I mean, he lost his head after about 20 minutes. He was round with supporters, officials. He had to be dragged off at the end. I mean, honestly, it was like, you know, that kid that was in your 11-a-side, your first Sunday side, who was just a liability. I just never seen anything like it. So he's worth keeping an eye on across the second leg. It was a peculiar game. Corey Adai is the Crawley goalkeeper. He's about 6'7". I would suggest. And he was really commanding last night, took some great crosses, played particularly well. But he had the ball for the majority of the first half on the right-hand side, so in like a centre-half's position, about 10 yards back from the halfway line. It was bizarre. And obviously Crawley want to play football. So I spoke to a few people around Crawley after the game and said this was a complete one-off, a complete rarity. And I said it during the commentary, MK Dons just sat in, just basically went man for man and went in their own half. So there was no one spare for the goalkeeper to pop the ball into. Invariably, Crawley are going to get it, Dion Conroy in particular, the centre-half, and they're going to play through midfield through Liam Kelly, who had a brilliant game, scored a wonderful goal. But MK Dons just completely, like Clarkey referred to about Bolton, just completely changed their tactics, just sat in and therefore forced them to go a little bit longer. And if anything, it looked really problematic. That first pass to try and connect, they were really struggling with. And in turn, MK Dons went really long. And if you think Crawley have squeezed right up into the opposition's half, when the ball was turning over, the MK Dons centre halves or goalkeeper was going bash. And that's how the two early opportunities, the one for Max Dean, came from. So I think there was a lot of like problem solving going on and probably a lot of instruction going on from the manager. And it was a bit bizarre for half an hour, but then it settled down and Crawley were so threatening going forward. That Lolos from, I think, Oxford City, brilliant player, loads of craft, quite unusual, about 6 foot and a brilliant dribbler, kind of velvet touch and two-footed. Really enjoyed watching him. Orsi, obviously we know about his goals. He was a threat as well. The two in the midfield, Liam Kelly, obviously very high pedigree previously where he'd been. Jay Williams signed out a non-league. He's the enforcer in the side, just kicked everything, but also got himself a goal. So yeah, really good value. Probably doesn't flatter them. MK Dons didn't turn up, but I know Clark is going to be at this one. And it evoked memories for me of that MK Dons Wickham tie from a few years ago when Wickham won the first leg 2-0. Then MK Dons absolutely battered them, but just couldn't get the goals in the return. So I think this could be a really interesting second leg. To just contradict what I just said, I think Crawley are really good away from home. And I think with that wide open space, if they do really commit early on MK Dons, I think this could be good fun. I think this could be a cricket score.
Two's recoverable. Three's probably not, Adrian.
Well, I don't know. I was at Hillsborough last year.
Can't say that anymore, Matt, basically. There's no point in saying that.
It's killed that, isn't it? That's like Leicester winning the Premier League. Yeah,
exactly. So now I think MK will look at that. And they'll look maybe, you know, if I was...
It's got 5-2, 5-3 written all over it.
To who?
No idea.
Would you let the keeper have it again, though? Or would you try and do something about it this time around? Because I saw the touch map, and it's quite extraordinary from the goalkeeper, Adai. Yeah, like, would you do something different? Because you can't just sit... But if you're chasing a three-goal lead, you've got to disrupt them. You know, otherwise the clock's just going to get run down, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the Williams that I mentioned earlier, the midfield player, he didn't really want to go and receive it. That's not his game. Liam Kelly's the one they want to get it on. But obviously, he's in quite an unnatural position in the opposition's half around the halfway line, trying to make himself available. So, yeah, I'd imagine they'll try and alter it both setups. I'd be surprised if MK Dons do that again. But it was circumstantial. Everyone goes mad for it, don't they, on social media. And he did an amazing, like... almost Cruyff turn on the half volley. He was given a disgusting back pass by Kelly, which actually nearly went in. It's coming out of the sky and he Cruyffed away from the MK Dons player that was closing him down. It was unbelievable, but I just thought it was obviously due to the MK Dons tactical setup that he was having so much time on the ball.
All right, well, the other semi-final in League Two resulted in a good result for fans of Doncaster and their form book. They beat Crewe 2-0 to put themselves in a commanding position ahead of the rematch. This was just not a surprise, Adrian, was it? You tend to back the home team in these kind of games, but not when they've won once since the end of February and the Oppo have won 11 of their last 12.
Yeah, probably quite a predictable result, but Donny still had to go out there and deliver, didn't they? And it was an interesting game. I think that obviously Crewe were probably the better team early on, had some good chances, wasted them, and then Doncaster's sort of form and class told in the end. They went quite long in, you know, long diagonals into Ironside. I think that's a big part of what they do. We saw a long ball force a mistake from Demetriou, which is a real shame for him. It's a terrible piece of defending from a long, simple, straight, long pass, and Ironside's away, and then he squares it. It's a lovely little finish from Biggins to sort of seal the 2-0. So, yeah, they're going to have to defend a lot better, aren't they, Crewe, if they're to stand any chance in this second leg? We know they can score goals, but can they keep out Donny, who scored at least twice in each of their last seven games? So, yeah, I think it wouldn't surprise me if Donny were professional and got the job done here and won by a couple of clear goals second leg.
All right, listener, let me make my favourite joke of the season once more. They're going to have to be so solid, Crewe, if they're going to have any hope of turning this around. A reminder as we wrap up the show that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers, sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the show notes. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at WhatTheEFL and on X, formerly known as Twitter, at EFLWhatTheEFL. And that is where we find our tweet of the week. It comes from a man with 3 million followers. It's Tom Brady, who is, well, he's got a minority stake in Birmingham. Probably that's been upsold a little bit throughout the season, albeit he has got his Birmingham shirt on in his Twitter profile picture. He is, quote, tweeting the official account saying a win on the final day, but it's not enough. Tom says, thank you for the support in a tough first year, Blue Noses. We have a long way to go, but it's because of all of you that we'll achieve great things in the future. Pretty standard stuff. This, Sam, I enjoyed Pano's reply. Don't worry, you get first pick in the draft. At least he's put it out there, but it's quite the vanilla tweet from a man who apparently is quite good at a sport that I have no knowledge of or interest in.
I think it's quite a nice sentiment. And I agree with quite a lot of what Clarkey said earlier, actually, despite, obviously, the demise on the pitch. Things are probably looking up in terms of the overall structure of the club, etc. I went straight to the replies as well, to be honest. And if you just scroll down a little bit further, OPAC has gone in with League One Super Bowl winners.
Yeah, there's a lot of this in there. I'm not sure what Diogenes means, Clarkey, when they say, want a massage? Lol. But probably legally, better leave that where it is. What do you think? This is a box-ticking exercise, or is he genuinely concerned about the state of the Blue Noses, of which he now professes to be?
Oh, I think he's just a cheesy kind of guy, isn't he? you know he is. He's had that long career in sport. He's super media trained. He's not going to say anything out of turn, is he? We have a long way to go, but it's because of all of you that we'll achieve great things in the future. It's probably not, though, is it? It's probably because of money. Mm. That's really what's going to help them achieve success moving forwards. But yeah, it's a nice bit of brown nosing on Tom's part. Did you see Bill Belichick, his former head coach in the NFL, absolutely hammering? Did you see it, Sam?
I didn't know who he was, but I did read it earlier today.
Yeah, right, I'm not an NFL.
I do know
person,
the name so now, actually. Now you say it, I do know.
He's
the name.
Like one of the most famous coaches, yeah. I think, in NFL, and he's just battered him, hasn't he? He's basically, he said that Birmingham suck and that it's not so easy running a team, is it, Tom, like that? So, it was quite embarrassing for Brady, but, you know, he took it on the chin. So, fun times ahead, I think, for Birmingham. I do fear, because it's a great-looking stadium. I don't know if you've seen the plans. It's across the road. It's in a sort of slightly rough area at the moment, but they'll flatten it and they'll build this mega dome. It's going to be 62,000. It's going to be a bit like MK Dons, isn't it? Like, as in, how long is it going to take for the upper tier to be open? Because I just don't think Birmingham City has that much of a pull, but I wish them well. And look, they've got their eyes on Premier League and being a big fish in the Prem. You know, whether that's a stretch too far, we'll see.
Yep, time will tell on that one. Time has beaten us for today, though. Thanks to Adrian and Sam for their contributions as ever. We'll be back with another show for you next week. Until then, it is goodbye.